Hello, and a very, very warm welcome to you, beloved family. It is such joy to be here with you again for this time of sharing.
It really is.
Honestly, this is the highlight of my week, just taking a moment to breathe and really get into the sermon message with you all.
Me too. And the message we're looking at today, it feels a little different. Usually we're, trying to learn things to be more efficient or smarter. But today feels like we just need to slow down.
Absolutely. The pace is different. The word in front of us isn't really about adding more data to our brains, is it?
No.
It's about doing a serious heart check. It's challenging, I won't lie.
It is challenging,
Yeah.
but I think it's the kind of challenge that brings life.
So let's just get right into it. We're looking at one of the most famous, but probably most misunderstood statements Jesus ever made. It's from Matthew 5:4. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
A statement that, on the surface, it makes absolutely no sense to the modern mind.
None at all. Let's just talk about that contradiction for a second. We live in a world that is completely obsessed with the opposite of mourning.
Oh, completely.
You scroll through social media, you look at billboards. What's the message? It's good vibes only. It's chase your bliss.
Right, do what makes you happy. We've built an entire industry around avoiding sadness. We treat unhappiness like a disease that needs to be, cured immediately.
Exactly. If you're sad, the world tells you you're failing. You're doing life wrong. We're told to seek pleasure, seek entertainment, just distract ourselves. And then here comes the word, just cutting through all that noise, saying, actually, you're blessed. You're happy if you mourn.
It feels like a total paradox.
It is.
But the sermon message points out that this paradox is, well, it's the key to everything.
How so?
We're conditioned to think mourning is the end of happiness. But the words suggest it's actually a gateway, a necessary step to get to a kind of comfort the world just can't offer.
And that's our mission today, beloved family, to figure out why this specific kind of sadness is a blessing. And just to be clear, we aren't talking about just being gloomy.
Right. That's so important.
We're not talking about having a bad day or the car breaking down or just feeling a bit down.
No, the sermon message takes us much, much deeper than that.
We're going to look at a shocking moment in a courtroom with a Nazi war criminal. We're going to look at a king who thought he'd committed the perfect murder, and we're going to discover why mourning might be the secret surgery that saves our lives.
I love that. A surgery.
So let's start with definitions. When the word talks about mourning, are we talking about depression? Are we supposed to walk around with long faces and never laugh?
That's the stereotype, isn't it?
Yeah.
The humorless religious person. But no, the message is very clear. Christianity is not a religion of gloom.
Right.
Jesus had wit, he had humor, he had joy. The sermon message actually quotes Charlie Chaplin, which I thought was brilliant.
I loved that part. Life is a tragedy when seen in close up, but a comedy in long shot.
It's such a profound line. When we're in the long shot, detached, we can laugh. But the mourning, Jesus calls blessed, that requires a close up.
A very extreme close up.
Exactly. The mourning discussed in the word isn't about losing money or a breakup. It is specifically mourning over sin.
Mourning over sin.
Yes, it's the emotional and spiritual reaction you have when you see the reality of your own condition in God's light. It's what happens when the mask falls off.
And to show how jarring that can be, the sermon message shares a story that, honestly, it gave me chills. It's about Charles Colson and a man named Yehiel Denner.
This is a powerful, powerful illustration. Let's set the scene. It's 1961, the trial of Adolf Eichmann.
Adolf Eichmann. I
Yeah.
mean, we're talking about one of the chief architects of the Holocaust, the man behind the logistics of the Final Solution. This isn't just a criminal, he's a monster.
That's how the world saw him, a demon. So Eichmann is on trial in Jerusalem, and the prosecution calls a witness, Yehiel Denner.
A survivor of Auschwitz. He had lived through the hell that Eichmann helped create.
Correct. So just imagine the tension. Denner walks into the courtroom. He's there to testify. He walks to the stand, he turns, and he looks at Eichmann sitting in that glass booth.
The big confrontation.
Denner looks at him, and he just collapses, faints dead away on the floor.
Wow. Now, this is where it gets so interesting. Everyone watching just assumed they knew why he fainted.
Of course, it seems obvious. They thought he's traumatized, he's looking at the face of pure evil, he's terrified of the monster.
That's the natural assumption. But years later, Denner revealed the real reason, and it was shocking. He didn't faint because he was afraid of what Eichmann had done.
No, he fainted because when he looked at Eichmann, he didn't see a monster. He didn't see a demon. He saw an ordinary, terrified small man.
Just a guy.
Just a guy. And that ordinariness terrified Daenerys more than any monster ever could.
Yeah.
He said in an interview, "I was afraid about myself. I saw that I am capable to do this. I am exactly like him."
I'm exactly like him. That sentence just stops you cold.
It changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If Eichmann is a monster, then we're safe. We can say, "Oh, I'm not like that. I'm a good person."
Right. That's a different species.
But if Eichmann is just a human, then the potential for that evil exists in all of us.
That was the close-up. Diener saw the Eichmann in his own heart. He realized the line between good and evil runs right down the center of every human heart.
And that shock of self-discovery.
Yeah.
That is the mourning the sermon message is talking about. It's not, "I am sad I got caught." It's, "I am broken because I see what I'm capable of."
It's mourning your own nature. And let's be honest, the beloved family, that is a terrifying thing to confront.
It's the most frightening thing a person can do, to really look in the mirror.
Which is why we don't do it. I mean, if there's a monster inside, my first instinct is to lock the door and pretend it's not there.
We think hiding it ensures our survival. We put on the mask, post the highlight reel, say, "I'm a good person." But the word flips that upside down. It says hiding sin leads to death, but exposing it brings life.
Which brings us to King David. The sermon message retells the story. And beloved family, even if you know it, try to hear it fresh. It's not a fairy tale. It's a horror story.
It is. And the context is key. David is the hero, the man after God's own heart. But he's at the height of his power, and he gets lazy.
He sees Bathsheba bathing. He wants her. He takes her. She becomes pregnant.
And this is where that Eichmann principle kicks in. He's not just an adulterer now. He becomes a manipulator. The cover-up begins.
He tries to deceive her husband, Uriah, one of his most loyal soldiers, but Uriah is too honorable. He won't enjoy comfort while his men are at war.
Which just highlights the contrast, doesn't it? Uriah's honor versus David's treachery.
So David escalates. He writes a letter ordering his general to abandon Uriah on the front lines so he'll be killed.
And he makes Uriah carry his own death warrant. It's just, it's cold-blooded.
It is. And the scariest part? He thinks he got away with it. Time passes.
And this is the part I want the beloved family to catch. David didn't mourn. He didn't weep. He just moved on. He justified it. He was completely numb.
He lost the ability to feel the weight of it.
Until Nathan the prophet shows up.
Ah, I love this scene. It's like a courtroom drama. Nathan knows he can't just accuse the king directly.
So he bypasses his defenses with a story, a parable. He tells him about a rich man with huge flocks and a poor man with one little lamb that he loved like a daughter.
And when a traveler came, the rich man didn't use his own sheep. He stole the poor man's only lamb and served it for dinner.
And David's reaction. He explodes in fury. He yells, "As surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die."
The hypocrisy is just, wow.
It's breathtaking.
Right.
But this is the human condition. He has 20/20 vision for someone else's sin, but he is completely blind to his own. He doesn't even see the stories about him.
We do that all the time, don't we? We can spot a flaw in our neighbor from a mile away, but we can't see the log in our own eye.
Exactly. We channel our mourning into judgment of others.
Mm.
But then Nathan drops the hammer. He points his finger right at the king.
"You are the man."
You are the man. And in that second, the mask shatters. The delusion evaporates. David finally sees his true self, the sinner.
He sees the Eichmann inside.
Yes. And that is the moment true mourning began. And here's the crucial point. That moment of exposure was the best thing that ever happened to
him. It feels like the worst thing. Being found out feels like death.
But it was a rescue. If Nathan hadn't exposed him, he would have stayed spiritually dead. David later wrote in Psalm 32 that his bones wasted away while he was silent. Hiding the sin was killing him.
So the exposure, as painful as it was the beginning of the cure.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the question, why is this necessary? Why can't we just be nice people? Why do we have to go through this painful mourning?
Because, as the sermon message says, there is no comfort without mourning. You can't be healed of a disease you refuse to admit you have.
It reminds me of the story of Jesus and the woman caught in adultery.
Right. The religious leaders were in judgment mode, just like David. They were focused on her sin to avoid their own. But Jesus says, "Let him who is without sin cast the first stone."
He forces the close-up.
He forces them to look in the mirror. He reminds them they're not judges, they're fellow sinners. And they all walk away.
Now, the sermon message points out something about the word mourning itself. In English, it can sound a bit soft.
It's much more intense in the original language. The Greek word is pentheo. It implies a gut-wrenching grief. The message compares it to the grief Jacob felt when he thought his son Joseph was dead.
That's a visceral, tearing kind of pain.
It is my insides are breaking, sorrow. That's how we're meant to feel when we realize how our sin separates us from God. It's not a polite, oops, my bad.
That sounds overwhelming and painful. Why would anyone sign up for that?
Because of the second half of the verse. For they will be comforted.
The promise.
The promise. In the world, that kind of sorrow, shame, guilt, it leads to despair. But for the beloved family, this sorrow has a destination.
It goes somewhere.
It goes to the cross. The sermon message quotes Proverbs 28:13. He who conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. The moment we stop judging everyone else and start mourning the sin in here, that's when God's grace rushes in.
Like a dam breaking.
It is. And the comfort Jesus promises isn't just a pat on the back. It's forgiveness. It's restoration. It's the only true relief for the human soul.
So bringing this to our current moment, the sermon message makes a really sharp observation. It calls our time a dry-eyed era.
A dry-eyed era. That phrase really stuck with me.
What does that mean exactly?
The observation is that we don't necessarily sin less than people did in the past, but we mourn it less. We've lost the ability to weep over our own condition.
Instead of weeping, we judge. We're quick to cancel people, quick to criticize on social media. Look at what that person did. We're addicted to outrage.
Exactly. We channel that energy outward. We're quick to condemn, but slow to repent. And because we don't mourn, we don't get that deep divine comfort. We just stay angry and anxious.
A cycle of outrage with no relief.
Very precisely.
And the sermon message frames this whole cycle mourning leading to comfort as a privilege. I really like that perspective.
It's a profound privilege.
Yeah.
The world has sorrow, certainly. Regret, shame. But it's often sorrow without a cure. Sorrow that leads to despair.
Oh, we have a cure.
We have a place to go with our mourning. We have a Father who says, bring me your brokenness, I'll give you wholeness. Only the believer gets to experience that.
Mm.
Deep mourning leads to divine comfort.
It changes how you see a guilty conscience. It's not an enemy trying to destroy you. It's an invitation to come home.
Yes. The message reminds us that if we don't have this holy mourning, the world will bring us other sorrows eventually. But this specific type, it comes with a guaranteed promise.
So what does this mean for us today? What's the practical step for the beloved family?
It's hard. It takes courage.
The challenge from the sermon message is this. Instead of looking at the news or your neighbor and shaking your head at their behavior today,
stop looking at the Eichmann in the history books. Look in the mirror.
And ask for the grace to see what's really there.
Ask to see the ordinary man inside, the one capable of things you don't want to admit. Not to shame yourself. This isn't about wallowing.
No.
It's about freeing yourself. You acknowledge the sickness so you can receive the cure. You acknowledge the debt so it can be paid.
That sounds like the start of revival. Maybe it doesn't start in big stadiums. Maybe revival starts in that quiet, painful moment when one person says, I am the man. I need grace.
That is exactly where it starts.
Yeah.
When the defense walls come down, God's Spirit rushes in.
I want to leave you with this thought, beloved family. We spend so much energy trying to feel good, trying to avoid pain. But think of it this way. If comfort is the cure, then mourning is the surgery.
Mm.
Are you avoiding the surgery because you're afraid of the pain, forgetting that it's the only way to save the patient?
That's the question. The pain of the surgery is temporary, but the healing is eternal.
Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. We love you, beloved family. Don't be afraid of the tears. Let the mourning come so the comfort can follow.
Be blessed.
Until next time.